Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, of Text 42. Brahmanasya hidehoyam Shudra kamaya nishate Krichchaya tapase cheha Prichananta sukaya cha Brahmanasya hidehoyam Shudra kamaya nishate Krichchaya tapase cheha Prichananta sukaya cha Brahmanasya. Oh, actually, yeah, you can chant first. Brahmanasya hidehoyam Shudra kamaya nishyate Krichchaya tapase cheha Prishananta sukaya cha Brahmanasya hidehoyam Shudra kamaya nishyate Krichchaya tapase cheha Prichananta sukaya cha Brahmanasya hidehoyam Shudra kamaya nishyate Krichchaya tapase cheha Prichananta sukaya cha Brahmanasya hidehoyam Shudra kamaya nishyate Krichchaya tapase cheha Prichananta sukaya cha Brahmanasya hidehoyam Shudra kamaya nishyate Krichchaya tapase cheha Prichananta sukaya cha Brahmanasya of a Brahmana. He certainly Deha body. I am this Shudra insignificant. Kamaya first sense gratification. Na not. Ishyate is meant. Krichchaya for difficult. Tapase austerities. Cha also. Iha in this world. Pritya after death. Ananta unlimited. Sukaya happiness. Cha also. Translation by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The body of a Brahmana is not intended to enjoy insignificant material sense gratification. Rather, by accepting difficult austerities in his life, a Brahmana will enjoy unlimited happiness after death. The body of a Brahmana is not intended to enjoy insignificant material sense gratification. Rather, by accepting difficult austerities in his life, a Brahmana will enjoy unlimited happiness after death. Purport. One may ask why a Brahmana should voluntarily accept inconvenience in keeping his body and soul together. In this verse, the Lord explains that advanced human life is meant for serious austerity and not for insignificant sense gratification. By spiritual advancement, one is fixed in transcendental bliss on the spiritual platform and gives up useless absorption in a temporary material body. One should remain detached from the material body, accepting only the bare necessities of life. The Brahmanas, by accepting a troublesome form of livelihood, never forget that the material body is destined to grow old, become diseased, and die in misery. Thus, remaining alert and transcendental, an advanced Brahmana at the end of his life goes back home, back to Godhead, where he enjoys unlimited spiritual bliss. Without such higher awareness, how can one be considered a qualified Brahmana? Those devotees engaged 24 hours a day in spreading the mission of Lord Krishna are beyond the platform of renunciation or sense gratification because they engage everything in Lord Krishna's service. A pure devotee of the Lord eats only to get strength for serving the Lord and does not accept either sumptuous or meager food simply for the body's sake. However, everything may be accepted for the Lord, even sumptuous meals. A Brahmana who is not working day and night to spread the glories of the Lord should feel embarrassed to eat sumptuously for his personal sense gratification. But a renounced Vaishnava preacher may accept invitations from all classes of pious people. And just to bless their homes, he will eat the opulent foods they offer to him. Similarly, he sometimes eats sumptuously to get strength for defeating atheists and impersonalists. As stated in Vedic literature, one cannot be a highly qualified Brahmana unless one becomes a devotee of the Lord. And among the devotees, those who are preaching Krishna consciousness are the best, as confirmed by the Lord himself in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Mangana timrandasya ganagana sarakaya chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So all throughout the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, all scriptures, it glorifies the Brahmana, you know, and just glorifies the austerities that he performs. Srila Prabhupada talks in the light of the Bhagavat. He talks about how, he gives one analogy of when, after nice rain, that there's so much greenery and so much beauty. But Prabhupada just, he explains, just like a man, who has performed some austerities, and he's become strong and powerful and good-looking. But Srila Prabhupada explains that this kind of a show is temporary. It's a very temporary show. And he also explains that there's in the 8,400,000 species of life, there's a certain amount of sense gratification allotted to each of those forms, and that you can't get more than you're supposed to get in each of those forms. And the same with human life. So different personalities, they preach about the uselessness of trying to become happy in this material world. People perform great austerities for very temporary benefits. You see people getting up, and it's getting, you know, more and more intense and worse in America and all over the world, really, where people, they have to work so hard just to get by. You know, I remember when I grew up, my dad worked, but my mom never had to work, and he was able to support the family. And he, not like he had the super, wasn't super wealthy, but he was, you know, he was able to do that. In this day and age, it's very difficult for, in fact, it says in the scriptures, if someone's able to maintain their family, they're considered to be a great personality in Kali Yuga. It's so difficult. But people form incredible austerities to be able to support their family, getting up very early, working hard all day. They get home. I know some devotees even who work all day, but they're working as doctors, nurses, and they get home, and they have to, they have so much time writing notes, you know, that they have to do when they get home. Even my daughter has to do that also. So, but so much austerity, so much penance, and for very little benefit. So Srila Prabhupada says over and over again how important it is to perform austerity for the benefit of Krishna and for self-realization. Prabhupada explains that the difference between a devotee and a demon, that a demon, he performs all kinds of austerities, but he performs it for his own sense gratification. That's a demon. So that gives us a picture of how many demons there are in the world. But a devotee is performing the penance and the sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure. And of course, as we perform those sacrifices for Krishna's pleasure, then we automatically also become very happy. Prabhupada's so funny. He's talking about how people, he's going whoosh, 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 whoosh. The motor cars, you know, just going back and forth and going back and forth. He says, and people, why? He said, where is happiness? You know, where is happiness? Where is happiness? Where can we find it? But it can never be found. It can never be found materially, you know, very, very temporary benefit. But people still, they're looking so hard. So that's why when they're contacted by a devotee with a book, or they happen to go past a Harinam party and hear the holy name, or they eat prasadam in a restaurant, or they're given prasadam in some at some program, this is the beginning of their spiritual life. So this is our duty, you know, to perform this kind of penance and austerity. There's a conversation between Yudhisthira and Bhishma when Yudhisthira is asking Bhishma, what gives the highest merit? You know, out of everything, what gives the highest merit? And Bhishma explains that restraint is what gives the highest merit. And he says that austerity is the essential nature of restraint, the idea of controlling the senses, of controlling the mind, of controlling anger, of controlling greed. All of these things come about through austerity. And Yudhisthira goes on, he asks Bhishma another question. He says, what rule should never be violated? You know, what should never be broken? And Bhishma answers that a brahmana should always be given honor and respect, but that should never be violated because it's such a big offense. There is a story that Prabhupada tells in the Bhagavatam about Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa, and explains that Maharaj Ambarish, he performed great austerities. This one particular austerity, he spent a year with his wife and just ate Ekadashi Prasadam. And as the time neared toward the end, he fasted completely for 3 days, just chanting and hearing. He bathed in Yamuna. He bathed his deities, dressed him in beautiful clothes and flowers. It was getting near his time to break his fast, and good old Durvasa came by. And Durvasa, Ambarish very kindly invited him to take prasadam. And Durvasa says, yes, I'd love to, but I have to go bathe and I have to meditate for a while. So Ambarish says, that's fine. That's very nice. Good for you. So he's meditating Krishna in the heart, Ambarish, and waiting for Durvasa to return, but it's getting closer and closer for the time for him to break his fast. And that's a big deal. It's like when you break your fast, it's almost as important as the fast, so he's not sure what to do. So what does he do? He consults the brahmanas, yes. And the brahmanas say, if you take water, that counts as breaking your fast. At the same time, it's not breaking the fast. So that's what he did, to drink a little bit of water. So good old Durvasa, he comes back, he comes in, because you have to understand he had so much mystic power that he could understand that Ambarish broke his fast. So he gets angry. He's angry at Ambarish for breaking his fast with water. He goes, you've insulted me by breaking, not waiting for me to take prasadam, so therefore you need to be punished. So he pulls out some hair, he throws it on the ground, he creates a demon. It says he's like he's on fire and he's so dangerous. And it says he's holding a trident, and as he walks, the whole earth shakes as he walks. What does Ambarish do? Nothing. He just stands there. It says he's completely peaceful and fearless due to his depending on Krishna 100%. So as the demon comes closer and closer, but Krishna manifests to Sudarshan. Sudarshan comes and destroys the demon, and it goes after Durvasa. So he's running and running and running and running, and the Sudarshan Chakra very close behind. And he first goes to Lord Brahma, please help me. Sudarshan is here, it's going to kill me. Lord Brahma's like, there is nothing I can do. You know, this is Lord Vishnu's department. Nothing, I can't help you. So he, again, running, 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 goes to Lord Shiva, and he asks Lord Shiva, you know, please help me. Sudarshan is after me, it's going to kill me. He said, you have to go talk to Lord Vishnu. This is beyond what I can do. So Durvasa Muni has so much mystic power that he is able to go to the spiritual sky. You know what I mean? That's pretty amazing. And he goes to Lord Vishnu. He explains the situation. And he says, please, I'm sorry. I apologize. Please get him off of me. You know, the Sudarshan, you know, take him away. Lord Vishnu says, you know what? My devotees love me. And I love my devotees. And if you want to be forgiven, you know, need to go to Ambarish Maharaj for forgiveness and apologize to him. So again, Sudarshan is still after him. He goes back down to Ambarish. He falls at his feet and he's like, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. And Ambarish says, no problem forgiving you. He says, I give you whatever you want. I give you, you're a Brahmin. I give you all my assets. I give you all my austerities. You know, you're completely forgiven. Let's sit down and take prasadam. So Durvasa naturally is completely stunned at this kind of forgiveness. It's like, how can this be? You know, how can this be? So he understands then the power of a Vaishnava, how far above even the power of a Brahmana this goes. And Prabhupada really stresses also the power of forgiveness, and even says that the most important quality of a Brahmana is his forgiveness. That because of his quality of forgiveness, it makes him brighter than, as illuminated as the sun. So I thought this is really something so important, this idea of forgiveness, because over time, so many of us have had, you know, interactions with devotees that have been less than favorable, you know, and oftentimes, you know, you hold these bad feelings, you hold these grudges, and of course, if you study this idea of forgiveness and anger, they actually say that when you hold on to this kind of anger towards someone, it's actually eating you alive, you know what I mean? It's eating you alive. It's hurting you so much more than the other person. So when we're able to forgive, you know, this highest quality of a Brahma, then we're able to become peaceful. So so many famous Brahmanas. There's also a story of Narada Muni and how Narada Muni is looking on when he sees Manigriva and Nalakuvara and how they're bathing the water with lots of consorts, completely naked. That when the girls see Narada, they immediately start to cover themselves, but Manigriva and Nalakuvara, they're so intoxicated that they have no clue, really, what the situation is. And Prabhupada explains that oftentimes, you know, people who are wealthy, that this is the situation, that they've lost any sense of honor. He also says how in Kali Yuga, that rather than penance and austerity, it's a wealth that gives people honor and distinction. He says, never mind, you know, penance, proper behavior, sweet words, knowledge, intelligence. In Kali Yuga, that doesn't really cut it, you know, among the general mass of people. It's wealth. So, you know, someone who's born into a wealthy family, oftentimes, just like Manigriva and Nalakuvara, they disregard proper etiquette. So Narada Muni, you know, really out of his compassion, he delivered the punishment to Manigriva and Nalakuvara that they would become trees because trees are immovable. They would stand there as trees for 100 years of Brahma, so that's a long, long time. But they would have some remembrance of what they did. And, of course, at the end, it's very glorious because they meet you know, Krishna delivers them, and that's another whole beautiful story. Krishna's so kind that he's able to deliver them. So, yeah, this penance of a brahmana, this austerity of a brahmana, it's so amazing. We're all working to be able to gain that, and you see that. Just even this last festival, we've seen that what devotees have done, and how, you know, generally austerity is thought of as something as quite painful. You know, like Prabhupada describes, like in the winter, these great sages will go into the water, it's freezing cold, and they're very scantily clothed, and they're meditating. Or in the summer, in the heat of the summer, you're already sweating, they sit in a huge fire, and they're, you know, again, they're performing these austerities to remember Krishna. But, you know, Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya, they never recommended that for us. What they recommended was chanting, dancing, feasting. And as you look at these devotees and what they do in order to please the Lord, it's really incredible. And the most incredible part of it is that devotees, after a while, they don't see it as an austerity. You know, it becomes this penance and austerity becomes their greatest pleasure. So just take, you know, addressing the deities, for example, all the incredible planning and work that goes into it. You know, people in charge of all the little decorations, and the outfits are sponsored by someone who's giving all their hard-earned money to get the outfit. And then there's the devotees who design the outfit, who go to great trouble, and there's devotees that sew the outfit, and then just all the colors, and there's devotees, you know, Govinda Mohini, who do all the jewelry, it takes so much time. If you get a close look at these ankle bracelets and the arm bracelets, you know, they're so intricate. I mean, I couldn't even begin to imagine how to do that. But devotees aren't seen, they're taking their time, they're not getting paid for it. They're just doing it out of love for Krishna. And for love for the devotees. So that's why people would think, well, why are you doing it? You know, why? You know, like if somebody gets fired from their job, let's say they work at a railroad company for, you know, 50 years, and but if they get fired from their job, they don't come back the next day. And, you know, or they're let go because, you know, the company's running out of money. They don't come back and keep working. Like, that's it, they're done. But devotees, they don't care about that. They just want to please. They want to please Krishna. You know, they're getting closer and closer to the spiritual world. Jama karma chame devyam evam yoviti tafataha tatjamam tatpatonyatva vishite tadanantaram. The one who stands in the transcendental nature of my appearance and my activities, he never takes birth again in the material world, but attains my abode. So as devotees meditate on Krishna, as they meditate on this spiritual world, then they become more and more involved in Krishna's pastime. Just like Hari Puja, she'll get up and she'll give a pastime that surrounds this particular holiday. So we become so engrossed in it. And also Sankirtan, you know, Sankirtan, it's such a great austerity. Prabhupada describes to go out into the world and to offer people books, oftentimes getting insulted. You know, you get insulted. People, God, get out of here, you know, get a job, or I don't care about that, or, you know, this is nonsense, this is a complete nonsense. But devotees, they not only take on that austerity because they believe in what they're doing, but they love it. They become addicted to it. You know, I remember back in the day in Miami, we used to go out on Sankirtan for maybe like, we get out there at 9 o'clock and stay till 5 o'clock, but after a while, and also there's a competition element involved in it, right? So everybody wanted to do their best, you know. Certain devotees were competing against each other, who could collect the most, who could give out the most books. So we started getting out there at 7 and not leaving till like 7 or 8 at night. So, you know, day after day, year after year, giving out so many books that you develop a higher taste, Brahmadishvanavartate, you know, a higher taste in being able to perform these penance and austerities with happiness and with a mind of understanding that this is what Krishna is asking for. And you know, wanting to develop our love. Once Srila Prabhupada was on a plane, and he was sitting next to a priest, and the priest commented to Srila Prabhupada, you know, I've met some of your disciples, and they're so bright-faced. And Prabhupada really liked that. He was very happy because, you know, as spirit souls, we're covered over with so many layers, you know, of anger, of lust, and greed, of ignorance. And by engaging in this process of purification, Prabhupada said that this all starts to fall away. And not only are we feeling purified, we're looking purified. Often people comment on that. They certainly comment on it when they saw Srila Prabhupada, that Prabhupada, they said, oh, but that man, he's effulgent. You know, he looks like the sun. People who are not devotees, they were able to recognize that. So as we engage in austerities, as we engage in this penance more and more, we're able to show. It shows, you know, it shows in our demeanor. It shows in our tolerance. It shows in our peacefulness. Prabhupada says that one should try to live in unlimited clear sky, overflooded with the rays of the sun and the moon. That a life of freedom and eternity and complete knowledge and a blissful atmosphere is the heart's desire of an enlightened soul. We can undertake all sorts of penances and austerities to attain that permanent source of happiness. So we see so many devotees who perform so many austerities. It's like Dhruva. Of course, Dhruva performed austerities for the benefit of, you know, attaining something material. He was so upset that his father had kind of neglected him and that his stepmother had insulted him that he goes and performs, you know, so many austerities, stops eating, you know, just eating leaves and bark and then just drinking water and then stopping to do that. And he's standing on one foot, he's praying, and the demigods are starting, you know, the picture, a painting that Pushkar did, shows Dhruva standing there on one foot and how the demigods are starting to choke and feel uncomfortable because of the austerities. But ultimately, Dhruva, when he gains gains the darshan of Krishna, he says, everything that all these things I want, all the material things are like pieces of broken glass, you know, compared to your service and your darshan. This devotional service is something so rare, so rarely achieved, but it's our entrance to the spiritual world, and we should take every opportunity to engage in it. It was kind of funny yesterday because we came here at 4:30. Some of us were here at 4:30 because it said on the schedule that there would be a procession of the deities at 4:30, you know, Gorni Thai. So I got here, a few other devotees got here, but there's like nobody here. So one of the devotees had taken off work an hour and a half early and kind of, it was difficult to get off of work and his boss wasn't real pleased with him, but he wanted to come to like be part of the procession. So he's like, I'm really upset about this. I'm going to go to the board because, you know, this shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be on the schedule. And then nobody's here. I said, well, we'll just go ahead. We'll just do it, you know? It's like, so I sent some of the girls. I guess there was no flowers. Nothing was decorating the palanquin. I said, go get some flowers. So they got some flowers. Of course, they were filled with ants, those red flowers. So we had to, like, make sure the ants weren't there. Decorated the palanquin. And found somebody, two people the same height, was able to carry the palanquin. And started out, Mother Kuti came up, she had some cut up carrots so we could give to the cows. And before we got like even probably, I don't know, a fifth of a mile, devotees were coming out of the woodwork, you know? They were coming out of the woodwork, and it was an incredible little festival. You know, we went and saw, we went around circumambulated the temple, we went to the eco farm, we went and saw, fed the cows. We went and saw Tulsi's house, and it was just so much fun. So these festivals are so important because they help us to gain more of a taste. Also, there's other people that perform austerities that I mentioned before, like Hiranyakashipu. He performed so much austerity, unbelievable amounts of austerity, that he was able to control the demigods. That Narada was paying his obeisances to Hiranyakashipu. That's how powerful he was. He was taking over everything. But ultimately, What was it worth? It wasn't worth anything. You know, he was completely destroyed, of course, by the Supreme Lord. So he did get a lot of benefit from that. But Srila Prabhupada, you know, over and over, he's emphasizing the uselessness of performing material austerities. You know, sometimes even I think like our youth, they want to be able to make a living for their families, because so many of us, it was difficult because all we did was perform austerities, you know what I mean, and not material austerities. So they have to understand that yes, material austerities for making a living, they're there, but really blessings from the brahmanas and blessing from the Lord, that's really where we get the most spiritual and material benefit. So you don't really have to worry. There's no loss, you know, in just performing material austerities. Just like Kolavecha Sridhar, he was, you know, making cups out of banana leaves, and he hardly had any money. You know, he was giving a lot of that money to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya came and said, "Hey, you know, how much are your cups?" He was trying to get them for cheaper, and Lord Chaitanya, he said, no. But ultimately, Lord Chaitanya gave him a benediction. Kolavecha, I'll give you whatever you want. What do you want? Anything. You know, because here you are, you know, making cups out of banana leaves, selling them for pice, you know, like, it must be something you want, because all I want is your darshan eternally. So again, that's another aspect of a brahmana, that he's happy with whatever he gets, whatever Krishna gives. So that's an art. I know for myself, I've really had to preach to myself and adjust with the ups and downs of material life, you know, sometimes having enough, sometimes not having not enough. But you do find that those times of not having not enough, that your dependence on Krishna, that it really blossoms, you know. Because what are your choices? I mean, choices, you can get angry at Krishna. And of course, you know, I've been there at different times in my life also, but I remember one time being specifically angry at Krishna for a situation in my life. And I was explaining this to another devotee, and the devotee looked at me and said, "You know what? A devotee never gets angry at Krishna." And I was like so embarrassed, you know, and immediately it rectified my behavior in my mind, you know, thinking, yeah, because you don't know why Krishna's sending you that particular difficulty. I was reading an amazing purport about Maharaj Bharat, and in the verse, it's saying, like, how could Maharaj Bharat, how could he fall down? It must have been due to his past fruit of activity, some impious activity that he performed, that he has fallen down, you know, and taken the body of a deer. But in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, no, that is not why, that devotees are not subject to their past activities. He uses the word indemnified. Love that word. Devotees are indemnified against their past activities. They're insured against suffering from their past activities. But that the reason, it was the purposeful act of Maharaj Bharat developing affection for this deer that caused him to fall down. But taking the body of a deer and giving the remembrance of his past lives hastened his purification. He so quickly realized what had happened, what had done. His love for Krishna grew so quickly and so fast that he was able to return to Krishna so much faster. So we never know in our lives with different difficulties that come that they're not special blessings from the Lord, that he's sending these difficulties to us particularly so we can depend on him. So we have to welcome them in some way, even though it's super hard. Of course, we have the quintessential example of Queen Kunti, who's praying for these difficulties to come so that she can remember Krishna. So many austerities are performed. And of course, we even see like Lord Ram, he, you know, was meant to be the king, yet he was asked to step down and go to the forest for so many years, not take the throne. Of course, you know, Lakshman and so many were telling him, you know, you don't have to do this. You know, you don't have to go to the forest. But he was so bound by honor and by following his father's wishes that he was happy to do it. He was completely okay going to the forest. Can you imagine if something like that happened to me? You know, I would just be outraged and do everything I can to regain my position. But these examples of these personalities of these great sages, you know, the Pandavas, you know, Prahlad, Dhruva, they're there for us to look up to and take solace in and to follow their example. That's why it's so important to get an opportunity to read, you know, regularly. When we read regularly, we're just like giving class, you know, it's so difficult in one sense, because here you're up in front of all these exalted devotees and you think, well, what do I really have to offer? But it causes you to really study so hard, you know, because you want to be able to awaken some spark, you know, in yourself and in others. So I'm always, even though it's super anxiety, it's always super rewarding at the same time to be able to gain more understanding and more knowledge and, you know, to be able to offer something to the devotees. So hopefully somebody has a reflection, a question. Yes, Himavati. Okay, wait for the microphone. It's now coming.
So I have two things to say. First of all, your class are very live. I have a comment and a question. The comment is, you know, I came also for the going around of the deities.
Oh, yeah.
There was nothing going on.
Yeah.
So I went by the kitchen to see if something was going on there. And the cook, he just said, hey, you want to do something? That was not my plan. So anyway, I got into the kitchen and he gives me these complete frozen bags of spinach, you know. And he say, you have to squeeze them with your hands to get the water out. That was so austere. My hands were frozen completely. I have to put them in the hot water once in a while so they defrost, and then I would do another one, and there was so many to do.
Wow.
And here I came to enjoy, you know, Krishna, and he's giving me this this reward. So that was my comment. The question is, what happens to a devotee who's really willing to forgive, but the person in return doesn't forgive you? What happens?
It's a good question. I mean, I think you've done everything you can, and that you just pray for that devotee to forgive you. That's what I would do.
So can you get the still everyone?
I'm not sure. Can anybody help me with that? What happens if a devotee, you ask for forgiveness, they don't forgive you?
After that, or I had a comment, but I...
She asked you a question.
Okay, so one forgives, the other doesn't want to forgive. And that could eventually lead to offense if
that's a good point.
If he doesn't yeah. forgive, you know, eventually it could, you know. But if you're advancing, why shouldn't you forgive? You know? Forgiveness is the quality of a devotee.
That's
you
right.
see? And I was going to say, like, when we were young in our immaturity, we offended so many people, you know. But I think with time, we really realize what we've done and we try to compensate for it. And I just hope that others would also forgive us. I mean, you know, me and myself, I had a very rash nature, you know, and I think over the years, many people have felt the bitterness of my attitude, I guess. But but I've come to regret it, you know, and I wholeheartedly seek forgiveness. So I comment, earlier you were saying in Kali Yuga, wealth would be the sign of advancement. It's stated in the scripture, it's stated that when people have wealth, they would be looked up upon.
Yes.
And like people who are, you know, great devotees and things, they would be shunned, you know. But within our society, we should be very careful, you know, to understand these things and not portray them, you know. You have an advanced devotee here and you have a wealthy one here, but he doesn't come to the program, he doesn't do anything really, you know, but because he has money, everyone looks up upon him. We have to be very careful about these things, you know, as devotees, because we know what is reality and what is not. Okay?
Srila Prabhupada does explain that a brahmana oftentimes purposely keeps himself in a very simple poverty-stricken. Prabhupada glorifies this poverty-stricken condition as something being very conducive to spiritual life, that just like Manugiva and Nalakuvar, because they were wealthy, it was easy for them to make offenses. And so brahmanas, they prefer this very simple situation. So they're born into a very simple poverty situation to help them develop their dependence on the Lord. Yes.
Regarding that forgiveness, when you don't get the response, I seem to recall, this goes way back into the early 80s, it may have even been before that, but I think Satyarup Maharaj wrote about it in his Japa Reform notebook, and maybe referencing Harinam Chintamani, that if you don't, you know, if a person doesn't forgive you, you've made an offense to him, or he's offended, then you go to him and ask, and if he doesn't do that, then you make a public apology. I remember making a public apology
one
time.
That's humble.
When someone had offended. And then if that doesn't work, then you just take shelter of the holy name.
And
then,
of course, there's always Tulsi Devi.
There's always what?
Tulsi Devi.
Oh, right.
I was just going to say one little thing, is that we were talking about austerity. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it also mentions the austerity of the mind, which would fit right in with that, which was satisfaction.
Mm.
So sometimes we make jokes about it where we'll just say, thank you. Like when Vaisheshika says, I live to be corrected. And then he says, thank you.
Oh, nice. I mean, look what happened to Durvasa when he wasn't forgiving to Ambarish for breaking his fast. You know, that's...
I was listening to this tape, I can't remember who it was by, but when Madai was feeling, after he was redeemed, he was feeling great remorse for all the horrible things he did. And I think Lord Nityananda said, why don't you make a ghat with your own hands, and all the people that will come there and take bath, you can ask their forgiveness. So some people were very angry at him because, you know, their daughters were molested, they were robbed and killed. So I think there was one specific instance where a guy threw stone at him, and then Madai picked up the stone and said, throw it again. He said, I deserve this so much. And he said, I melted the guy's heart, and he said, you're forgiven. Oh. So when real humility is there, you know, he was really feeling, you know, humble. Mm. And so when real humility is there, it actually touches the other person's heart. But sometimes, you know, we ask for forgiveness, but we're doing it because we think it's a proper thing to do, but sometimes we're not at the right stage to ask for it.
That's true.
So sometimes if things are done in proper consciousness, sometimes you get a proper result.
Good point. Thank you. Yeah, and just Hemavati talking about the cooking, that's another place. Wow, austerity, you know, in the kitchen. It gets so crowded, gets so hot, you know, winter, summer. And so much hard labor, you know, so much work. And you see that, like, when Chaka comes out of there, you say, Chaka, it was all Yogeshwar. He says, oh, Yogeshwar, the master of all mystery. I don't know how I did it. Yeah, he said, I don't know how I did it. It was Yogeshwar that did it. He's so, just so enlivened, you know, by an able. Cooking is, I remember when I stopped doing Sankirtan, in the ninth month when I was pregnant with Ramananda, finally the temple president told me, Sukada, I think, well, I just think that, don't go out anymore. You're going to have that baby out in the airport. So I thought, what am I going to do? You know, what am I going to do if I can't do Sankirtan? So that, well, I'll start cooking for the devotees who are out in Sankirtan. And it was so blissful. It was like, it's as blissful as being out in Sankirtan, because it's so much, it has to do with your consciousness, you know what I mean? And I really wanted to serve. So devotees are incredible. They're performing all these austerities and penances, and they're just doing it to, because they like to. It doesn't even seem like austerity and penance. It just seems like fun. All right. Thank you so much. Oh, okay.
I have kind of two questions. So one is like about forgiveness. So personally, we may be able to forgive, but we may not be able to forget certain things that may come from different source.
Mm-hmm.
So that pain will always haunt when dealing with such relationships in our heart.
Right.
So it's very, I have observed so many times, like it is very hard to get out of that pain. It's deep in the heart, in the core of the heart. And so often I have always observed that it's agitating me and it's disturbing me.
Okay.
So how can that, I can get out of that pain?
Well, I do have a response for that. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, don't blame the person who is delivering your karma. And it also, you know, that you can hate the sin, but don't hate the sinner. In other words, this personality who delivered the offense, they're ultimately a spirit soul filled with eternality, knowledge, and bliss. But because of the modes of material nature, right, they performed an act or, you know, words that were very unpleasant, that are hurtful. But I think it's one way to heal, to understand that, you know, nothing happens by accident. That's one thing. Again, like sometimes these activities can spur us to a higher platform of understanding. Does that make sense to you at all? Does that help?
So we should accept, like, that pain as our own karmic reaction, and then...
That's one part of it. I mean, we have to, right? That's one aspect of it. And I'm not saying, like, you don't forget in the sense that, you know, let's say it's somebody robs you, you're not going to give them the opportunity to rob from you again, obviously. You know what I mean? But you're going to understand that that's not the real them, right? That's not... The spirit soul in this pure form wouldn't do that. So you may avoid their association, and that's totally legitimate. But in order to get, you know, to get that out of your own heart, you have to understand and wish them well. You know, just like, you know, Jesus Christ is on the cross, right? And all these things are in Haridas, right? They forgave the people. Haridas forgave everyone who had beaten him, you know? So those examples are there.
So because I'm not in a pure, I'm not a pure devotee, so I can get inspiration from those pastimes, but to practically implement in each and every situation deals a lot of, like, because I'm going through so many anartha, because getting, to cross over the anartha stage takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of our efforts, it takes a lot of our energy, and even if we do effort, Krishna has to mercifully give that strength. So it's a very gradual process to cross over that anartha stage. So all these things, contaminations or hurt or pain happen, struggles happen during that stage of anartha nirvritti. So once we cross over that, we might be able to apply all these principles of humility or forgiveness or whatever. So I'm asking a practical question for the sadhakas. For me, it seems like I have crossed my initial, means I am not here, I am not there, I am in the middle. So to cross over that stage of anarthas, because sometimes it's very hard and painful to accept certain things and move on. So that pain, so many things piles up with that, adds up to that.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I, during my anarthanirti stage, how can I accept this principle of, like as we told Haridas Thakur, how did he behave with proper humility, and how can I apply that?
Well, I think from, like you mentioned, humility, of course, that's very important. We have to pray for those kinds of things, you know what I mean? We have to pray for humility. We have to pray to be able to forgive. I remember there was a devotee that I had a difficult time with, and I mean, it was a really difficult time for me, but I finally realized that it was hurting me, and I went up and paid my obeisance to them. Now, this person later on got cancer, and I went over and was helping them, you know. And this person looked up at me and said, "I can't believe after all I said and did that you're here, you know what I mean, taking care of me." So I know for myself, it doesn't always feel natural, but I just try to follow the example. The other thing is, I remember that, you know, there's 8,400,000 species of life, Srila Prabhupada said, we've been in every one of them, maybe several times. So that means we've been the butcher, you know, we've been the murderer, we've been the, you name it, we've been there, we've done it, you know, in this material world. So when you realize where you're coming from and what you've done, it makes it a little easier to look at somebody else and say, oh, I feel sorry for them, you know? Just like Lord Nityananda, he felt sorry for Jagannath Madhai. He said to Lord Chaitanya was going to cut his head off the Sudarshan. He says, don't. If you kill them, you get to kill everybody in this age because they're all like that. So I do think that prayer, you know, genuine prayer, please help me overcome this feeling I'm having. Krishna will award that to you. And the other part, just really remembering where we're coming from. It's not, you know, we're coming from a long line of births. You know, we've been engaged in so many activities. So that's also humbling. That makes us humble and makes us more willing to forgive somebody else's ignorance, because people perform offenses in ignorance. You know, that's where it comes from. So if we can remain in goodness and we can develop that most important quality of the Brahman, forgiving, then, you know, we'll be able to be peaceful. But it's a process. It's a process. But, you know, as you dress the deities at home or here, you know, then you say, please help me get over this. Please lead me in direction so I can be done with this feeling. Is that helpful?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
I can meditate on that. So one more question that Mataji asked, like about when she went to the kitchen, she was being told to squeeze the frozen spinach. So sometimes, even though she came for another means,
purpose, yeah.
Following the procession is also a devotional service. That's what I understand. So if we were asked in such a situation where our plan is different, but we were being asked to carry over certain other things, so because of our limitations to commit for that service, if we apologize for that, and if we tell that, sorry, I have to go for something else, maybe we may prioritize certain services. So how can we know, like, whether Krishna wants that service at that situation, or Krishna wants me to go with that sankirtan at that situation? How can I know that?
I mean, it depends on your obligation, you know. Like, if you've said, I'm going to come and, you know, make garlands for the deities, and then they ask you to do the spinach, you just say, well, I can't because I have another service, you know. And even like if Himavati had said, oh, Prabhu, but I'm dedicated to going on the parikram, there wouldn't have been any offense, you know what I mean? But she just felt like, I'm assuming, just felt like, well, they need me, and okay, I'm going to do it, you know. So, you know, it's not necessarily an offense to turn down one thing and do another. It's all in the realms of bhakti yoga and pleasing Krishna, you know. But especially if you have an obligation, then you should fulfill it, of course.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. I'm going to try. If I don't come, it's just like, I just couldn't come, you know. I was looking at my notes after to see all the things I left out.